Blind Dave of Austin, Texas.
Good morning. What an honor. This is my best half, my wife, Norma. Sunday morning spiritual speaker. Wow. You know, Kris Kristofferson wrote a song that Johnny Cash sang. Said, oh, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head that didn't hurt. He said, and the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled through my closet till I found my cleanest dirty shirt. Washed my face and combed my hair and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. You know, I remember, got a little bit of feedback there. I remember discovering what a beer could do for you in the morning. I was probably 20 years old, 21 years old, when I first discovered the morning drink. And that was when my weekend drinking began to spill over into the week. Because once you have the morning drink, you know. And I was thinking of that song this morning because I got up early. And I thought, what a journey it has been from that song. Because I think that song captured the feeling of being an alcoholic more than any other song I've ever heard on the subject. And what a journey from there to being asked to be the Sunday morning spiritual speaker. And I thank God for that journey. I'm honored to be here. Thank y'all for asking me. I'm Blind Dave, and my sobriety date is July 9th of 1998. Amen. You know, in Bill's story, we all know about the day that Ebby came and talked to Bill there in his kitchen table. And he said, Bill, I got religion. And Bill thought, oh, crap. Yeah. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I guess he's a little cracked about religion. And anyway, it went on there. And finally, Ebby said, Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And that Bill was able to drop his defenses on that statement. Melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow he had lived and shivered many years. Bill checked into a hospital because he showed signs of delirium tremens. And it was his third effort at treatment. It was there that Ebby came and laid the steps in front of Bill to examine. And Bill said, my friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator and would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. And Bill said, simple but not easy. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. That he looked it over. He said, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. Bill began to get excited. About what? Well, about the promise of the program that Ebby had just told him. And Bill worked those steps, looking forward to that. And he had a spiritual experience. He said, God comes to most men gradually, but his impact upon me was sudden and profound. Bill had a big spiritual experience. And then he said, as I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there must be thousands of hopeless alcoholics who would be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They in turn might help others. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, he had said, it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Bill said, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics find a solution to their problems. It was fortunate, he said, because my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which time I found little work. I was not too well at the time, and I was plagued with waves of self-pity and resentment, getting turned down for jobs. I was plagued with waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometime nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. So he said it was fortunate. What was fortunate? It was fortunate that he didn't find any work for a year and a half? No, I don't think so. It was fortunate that he and his wife abandoned himself with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics find a solution to their problems. Why was that fortunate? For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Well, what low spots was laying ahead for Bill? Waves of self-pity and resentment, which sometime nearly drove him back to drink. Did working with others save the day, he said? Working with others will get you out of that, won't it? Sure will. But what about the year and a half during which time he found little work? Does working with others answer that problem? Let's read Bill's story again. He said, my friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator and would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. He said, as I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there must be thousands of hopeless alcoholics be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. He said, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm. There's that excitement again. Bill's excited. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics find a solution to their problems. Does the promise of our program truly hold an answer for all our problems? Or is it just designed to help us stay sober through them? Bill said it was fortunate. For my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which time I found little work. I think it was fortunate that Bill abandoned himself with enthusiasm to helping other alcoholics, because I believe that working these principles in all his affairs had an impact upon the year and a half during which time Bill found little work. I bet Bill's got some tremendous stories of God's supernatural provision during those days. I'd like to hear some of those stories. I bet I could match him with some of my own. I bet you could too. I was not too well at the time, and I was often plagued with waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometime nearly drove me back to drink. Yes, it got him out of himself. But the point I want to make is that our program isn't just designed to help us stay sober through hard times. I believe the promise of our program will answer all our problems and will have an impact on all those situations. I mean, after all, what is step one? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. There's two parts to step one. And by the time we get to step three, we made a decision, what, to turn our alcoholism over to the care of God? No, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I believe this program is about bringing God and an experience with God into every aspect of our life. Let's look at step three. First of all, it says on page 28 of the Big Book that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms, as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. So it makes it very clear there that in this process of forming a relationship with our Creator, it is going to be upon terms. There are terms to our relationship with our Creator. And we find those terms on page 63, where we made the decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood Him. And it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Now notice it did not say, when we sincerely took such a position, a remarkable thing followed. No, it says all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, He provided what we needed, if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. He provided what we needed. I believe this program does answer such a thing as a year and a half, during which time we find little work. God provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. It went on in that third step prayer to say that He would remove all our difficulties, that victory over them would bear witness to those we help of His power, of His love, and of His way of life. It's a way of life. It's His power in my life. If I will keep close to Him and perform His work well, if that is true, then there is absolutely nothing more important than for me to learn how to keep close to Him and perform His work well. After I do a third step with sponsees, I get them up off the floor. I say, now, the third step prayer. I get them up. I say, now, do you realize that God has left you nothing to worry about except how to keep close to Him and perform His work well? And if you'll worry about that, you'll never have to worry about anything else. Whoa. For me to keep close to Him and perform His work well, and He will bring all His power to bear upon my life to do remarkable things in managing my life remarkably well, to provide what I need, to remove all my difficulties, that I will be an example of His power and of His love and of His way of life. That keep close to Him and perform His work well also paraphrases into our primary purpose, to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And the big book later says that we have been given a great sense of purpose. Our primary purpose. It's great. Why? Because we've been given a great sense of purpose accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. Throughout my life, God handed me that primary purpose and said, worry about this, I'll take care of the rest. And established on such a footing, it goes on to say there in step three. Established on such a footing, what footing? Upon a clear understanding of the terms and conditions by which I have an interactive relationship with my Creator. God does this if I do this. God says, in essence, I will do all this when you do this. So the ball is in your court. Have a clear understanding of the terms and conditions by which you can elicit a response from God. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. See, there's me managing my life. I'm losing interest in that. More and more, I'm becoming interested in seeing what I can do to contribute to your life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered this is how you face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And the big book goes on to say that we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. You know, my first sponsor, hammered this passage from the big book so much that it began to irritate me a little bit. And I mean, I would hear him. People would walk into the, to our AA meeting, and if you walked in and your halo wasn't on just right, he'd say, how's your serenity today? And you'd say, well, you know, it's not too good this morning, Ed. I mean, you know, and he'd say, well, have you asked God to remove that? Have you discussed it with someone immediately? Make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone, and resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help? And you'd say, well, no, I haven't done that yet, Ed. And he'd say, well, thank God. Because if you had done that and still felt this way, I wouldn't know what to tell you. Ed said this was a wrench that would fit any nut. And it would. You know, I mean, you in the meetings, they'd say, you got anything you want to share this morning, Ed? Yes, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment. You know, and I remember thinking, oh my God, I got a sponsor that knows one passage from the big book. But you know, the day came that I get a little bit of a disability check. And one day, right about the middle of November, right about Thanksgiving time, I got a check. I got a letter from Social Security saying they were going to cut my check, $600 a month. And the fear of financial insecurity that had just sort of begun to leave me after working in First Nine Steps jumped back on me with a vengeance when I read that letter. I mean, it was crushing me, the fear. It was crushing me to the floor. And in that moment, I heard the voice of God. It sounded like my sponsor. He said, ask God to remove that fear. Discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone, and turn your thoughts to someone you can help. I remember thinking, what does resolutely mean? Well, this was right at Thanksgiving time, the opening of the Christmas season. New Year's was right around the corner. I knew people made New Year's resolutions. You know, come 1st of January, bless God, they're going to go on a diet, or they're going to quit smoking or something. And what they mean is they're going to, you know, plant their feet and with resolve and with determination, they're going to lean into that thing and push and resist it. That was a New Year's resolution. So I wondered if I'm going to resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I could help meant that this fear that was coming in on me and crushing me to the ground, if it meant I was going to lean against it and push and turn my thoughts out to someone I could help. So that's what I did. Every one of us is going to have a day, Lila mentioned it last night, when we're going to live the program instead of just talk about it and read about it. We're all going to have a day where it's going to come down to where the rubber meets the road. And this was my day. Either God is or God isn't. This was the point in my program when I started going to the meetings, not so y'all could help me, but because I needed someone to help. And I'd sit in the meetings, and if I heard anybody share, they were having kind of a hard day, I'd look for them at the end of the meeting and try to share something encouraging with them. But I was fairly new. I didn't know the program real well. But I would do the best I could, and I'd go home, and then I'd be reading my big book and find something. I'd say, hey, this is what I wished I could have shared with that guy this morning. I'd go back the next day looking for him so I could share with him what I read that night. It changed my whole approach to reading the big book. The whole focus of my program began to change here. This is where I began to get established on it's not about me, it's about who I can help. And a whole new experience arose in my recovery. I remember when I opened that letter thinking, oh God, there goes Christmas this year. But I want you to know, after going to meetings, starting to look for people to help and getting caught up in it, we went through Christmas and had one of the best Christmases ever. No lack of presents under the tree. Came to the 1st of January, sat down to figure the bills for the first half of the month. We do our budget in the first and last half of the month. We had enough money in the bank to pay the bills for the first half of January, and we didn't know how that happened. Couldn't explain it. And my wife said, let's go ahead and just kind of add it up and figure, you know, how we're going to end up at the end of the year. Well, it was kind of scary to think about looking that far down the road. But I said, sure. So we went ahead and added it up. And it looked like we were going to hit the end of January $500 short. I said, but Norma, if you get scared, ask God to remove that fear and discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if you've harmed anyone. Resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And this is the point that my wife and I, she joined me. We became joined at the hip in service work in this program and have been ever since. We came to the 1st of January, all the bills were paid. Did not know how it happened. 1st of March, all the bills were paid. 1st of April, all the bills were paid. 1st of May. Somewhere along about that time, I began to get some things resolved, make some life changes, and it all just ironed out. But for 5 months, including Christmas, life didn't seem to skip a beat, and can't explain it. I know that somewhere toward the end of February, I thought, I better call the bank and see if we've got any money left, because, you know, getting right down to the end, I don't want to start bouncing checks. And so I called the bank, and that little recording said that I had $500 in my checking account. I thought, there's no way I could have made a $500 miscalculation when you're watching your pennies. You say, well, what, are you saying that God dropped $500 into your checking account? I don't know that I'd want to say that. But I don't know what to say. All I know is it was there, and I was real excited. And I got out my journal, and I'm writing in my gratitude journal, you know. I called the bank today. And so I'm flipping through the journal to find my February page. And as I passed by the January page, I noticed an entry there from the previous month that said, I called the bank today and there was $100 in the bank more than I thought I had. I thought, hey, it happened in January too. You know, in March, one night I stayed up all Friday night and then didn't get to sleep Saturday. So by Saturday evening, I was really ragged out. And my wife said, is there anything you want to do this evening? Go out or something? I said, oh, man, too tired to go do anything. I said, tell you what, they're supposed to have a good speaker, I hear, over at our AA group. I said, we'll go over there and listen to the speaker. You can listen to the speaker, and I can doze in the chair. So we drove over there and drove up 5 minutes to eight. And I'm walking up the door, and the door flew open, and the chairperson came out and grabbed me and said, Dave, our great speaker just called and canceled. And I said, yeah. And he said, will you speak? I must have just been the first person he saw after he hung up the phone. Because I want you to know that I had never spoken in an AA. I'd shared in meetings, but I'd never been a speaker. I had gone to detox a few times with a friend, and we took some turns, a few minutes each. And I wasn't sure I was doing too good there, and I was trying to learn to get better. And everyone's coming to hear this great speaker, and I've got to fill in. No way. I said, no, I can't do that. I can't do it. And I said, I didn't sleep last night. I've been up all day. I said, I'm so ragged out, and I don't have the presence of mind. And Norma said, you can do it, Dave. So she took me aside and prayed with me, and they propped me up behind the podium. And he said, here with 5 minutes' notice is Blind Dave. And it was my first attempt to be a speaker. And I started off kind of rough. I'm Blind Dave. I was born in Houston, Texas, a certain date. You know, like I wasn't even sure about that. But, you know, after a few minutes of chugging along, there was a point at which something caught. You know, have you ever been in your car, someone's going to pull you with the chain, and so they're easing forward to kind of get the slack out of the chain, and then clink, you feel it catch, and you know you're in tow. I felt that. My first time that night. I felt God lay His hand on me and take hold. I've never forgot it till this time. I've had it many times since. Turning my thoughts to someone I can help. Clink. God takes hold. I want you to know at the end of that night, I got a standing ovation you wouldn't believe. They stood and cheered. And they were all over me at the end of that meeting. And oh, I was the man of the hour, and it felt good. Boy, I tell you, it felt good. And at the end of that meeting, everybody's gone, and now me and my wife are going driving back home, and the excitement's over, and I'm sleepy again in the car, you know. And we get home. She said, hey, somebody gave me a note, said someone gave it to them to give to me to read to you when we got home. And I said, cool, what does it say? She unfolded this note, and $500 fell out of it. And we got through March. You know, this was my initiation into ask God it wants to remove it. Discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if you harm anyone, and resolutely turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And clink, you're in tow. The big book says both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you look back, you realize the things which came to you when you put your life in God's hands was better than anything you could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what the present circumstances. Watch God flip it right side up. No matter what the present circumstance. I've had people say, Dave, you don't understand. You didn't have it as bad as I did, Dave. I say, it says here, no matter. No matter what your starting place is, God will flip it right side up. You will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. If you follow the dictates of your higher power, it says, what are those dictates? Keep close to me and perform my work well. The big book says, like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, our pick struck gold. Joy at our release from a life of frustration knew no bounds. This is where I was relieved of my post of having to worry about life. Joy at our release from a life of frustration knew no bounds. We have struck something better than gold. So does keeping close to Him and turning my thoughts to someone I can help get me out of myself? Yes. But does it also bring God into my situation, whatever it is, no matter what your present circumstances? Because of the terms with which I formed a relationship with my Creator, and by which I turned my will and my life over to His care, the primary purpose has now become the generator of my spiritual experience. The spiritual experience of having God provide what I need and to do all sorts of remarkable things, removing my difficulties, that victory over them would bear witness to those I would help, of His power and of His love and of His way of life. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. So, Bill went on to begin his recovery, and we all know the story. 6 months later, he was in the Mayflower Hotel, and he had been sent there on a business assignment, hoping he might finally land a job. The company promised that if he did okay on this assignment, they would give him a position with the company. Y'all are aware of the story, but his business, it says in chapter 11, from a business standpoint, his venture turned out badly. Had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially, which at the time seemed important. What time was it? The Depression. And Bill has been for months without work. Oh, this is a great opportunity. At the time, it seemed important. But his venture wound up in a lawsuit and bogged down completely. He didn't just knock on the door and ask some lady if she would like to buy a vacuum cleaner, and she said, no, thank you, young man. No, he went down to Akron to represent some company and got caught up in a legal situation and bogged down completely. It says the proceeding was shot through with much hard feeling and controversy. They don't like this company, and Bill is the fall guy. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange town, discredited and almost broke. This is the day the rubber's going to meet the road for Bill Wilson. Either God is or God isn't. One dismal afternoon, he paced the hotel lobby, wondering how his bill was to be paid. He didn't have the money to get out of town. And he wanted out of this town bad. Then he hears the tinkling glasses in the bar. It's funny how you hear them at times like that, isn't it? And he thought about a drink. In fact, he said if he could just go into the bar, he bet he could drum up a friend. And I'm sure he's thinking that I can borrow some money from. He said, I've been sober 6 months. Surely I can handle a couple of drinks. Uh-oh, he realized he was on thin ice. Then it says, but what about his responsibilities? How am I going to explain that to the boss? Did you really ever have a problem explaining it to the boss why you weren't coming to work in the morning? Didn't take me long to come up with what I was going to tell the boss. But what about his family? Did I ever really have a problem thinking what I was going to tell the old lady as to why I didn't come home tonight? Mm-mm. Then he heard, what about the men who will die because they will not know how to get well? And Bill said, oh yes, those other alcoholics. What other alcoholics? The ones he saw in his heart back when he laid on the hospital bed, when he said, I bet there's thousands of hopeless alcoholics who'd be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. And he caught a vision of what Ebbie had just promised him, that if he would give himself to helping other alcoholics, that he would find in this program the elements that would answer all his problems. He remembered that in this moment. I hope you will remember it in that moment. Oh yes, he said, those other alcoholics. I bet there's some in this town. And he hit the phone, made a bunch of phone calls, and finally someone hooked him up with Dr. Bob. And the story goes on to a glorious ending about how Dr. Bob got sober and how they went and got alcoholic number 3. And that by the time Bill left Akron that summer, the first AA group had been established. It was a glorious ending. And I thought, but Bill, how did you get out of that hotel situation back there? It never did tell us. Well, you know what? I can't tell you how me and my wife got through December and January. I can't tell you. But I can tell you the glorious experience I had working with other alcoholics. And then, you know, so Bill meets Dr. Bob. And he's telling him about the program. And they get up to the point about the step 8 and 9 stuff. And Dr. Bob balked. He argued, should he risk losing the remainder of his business by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? Isn't it funny how sometimes these spiritual principles look foolish? Oh, God. By foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood. I remember one time a few years ago, we had a hailstorm in South Austin that just destroyed a lot of roofs, and mine was one. And so I had the insurance guy come out, and he looked at the roof, and he gave me his estimate, yeah, what they would pay, you know. And he told me $3,200. Plus, I had a $900 deductible, so that means he'd pay $23. And he said I had a year to get this job done. This was in October. And so I thought, good, because I'm going to need that year to save up my $900 deductible, you know. So I didn't even think no more about it until we come all the way around the year to about June the next year. And I thought, oh, God, I've only got a few months left. And then on top of that, my wife walked in and said, hey, guess what? I can retire 5 years earlier if we buy back 5 years of my retirement. I said, for how much? She said, $4,250. You got to be kidding. I'm trying to save up $900. I'm in a crunch to get that. And she said, well, that is if we get it done by October. After that, the price is going up. I said, I'm trying to come up with $900 by October. So, you know, I went to bed that night, did my little inventory, and yes, I spotted some fear, which I asked God to remove, and planned to discuss it with my sponsor the next morning immediately. I jumped in bed, I'm going to sleep, and I hear that little voice that you start getting to know in this program. And that little voice said, did you ever finish paying for your seeing eye, dog? Why should I think of something foolish like that at a time like this? You know, I said, no, I haven't. And I thought, that wasn't God. So I tried to go to sleep, you know, but I wake up the next morning, and as soon as I wake up, that's on my mind. And so I'm walking around all day going, that wasn't God. That wasn't God. I've been sober for X amount of time now and doing just fine. Why should I think of that now? So I pushed it out of my mind. And that evening, it's time to fix supper. I walked into the kitchen. I've got a little radio on the kitchen table. I like to listen to talk radio. And I flipped it on that day to a little talk thing. And I clicked on the radio. The first words that come out of it, this lady said, "Hi, I'm Jane Doe. Today we're going to be talking to John Smith. John recently went blind and got a seeing eye dog, and he's fixing to talk to us about what it's like to have a seeing eye dog." So, and I remember looking up and saying, "God, I can't afford to pay that right now, God." And what came booming back at me said, "You can't afford not to. What are the terms and conditions of your relationship with God by which you elicit a response from God, by which you engage the power of God? Keep close to Him and perform His work well. Keeping close to Him means cleaning up your side of the street." And I said, "Yes, sir, I guess you're right." So I called CNI, and 20 years ago I got that dog. And then I went home, got caught up in another divorce. And, you know, they told us they wanted us to pay for that dog. They didn't want someone else to pay for it for us. They found out we'd take better care of the dogs if we paid it ourselves. They didn't care if we paid $1 a month or what, but just pay it yourself. Well, since they weren't really putting a squeeze on me for that, I went home, got caught up in another divorce. Alcoholism broke out all over again. And I left that marriage with a lot of debt, as we usually do. And since they weren't squeezing me for that one, I think it got pushed to the back and forgotten about. I couldn't remember if I'd ever paid any of it. And so I called him, and the guy said, 20 years ago, I have to go look back through the microfilm or something. And he called me back a few days later and said, "Yes, sir, you still owe us $35. Oh, boy. Oh. I was glad to hear that. And I put $35 in the mail and sent it off. And I said, "God, you sure did make a big fuss out of $35. And God said, "You didn't know it was $35. You thought you owed the whole thing." And that's a lot of willingness. And the big book says that at that point, He will match our calamity with serenity. And I felt that. It was like God said, "Now step back and watch this." I want you to know, a few days later, I ran into a guy, brand new in recovery, didn't have any work. He's an old roofer. And he looked at my roof. Now, by the way, when I had the first roofer come out and look at it and give me a bid, he gave me a bid much higher than what that insurance man estimated. And I said, "He told me $3,200. This guy was saying something like $5,000. He said, "Well, he must not have noticed you got two roofs on here, and I got to pull both of them off before I can put a new one on." And he said, "Plus, whoever put the last one on here didn't do it right, and water's leaked all under here. All your decking is rotten. All your two-by-fours that jut out past the walls is rotten all the way around the house. All your fascia is rotten all the way around the house. And I can't put a new roof on here until we fix all that." And he said, "That's not hail damage. Your insurance isn't going to cover that." The situation had gotten out of hand. And so I called this new roofer, and he looked, this boy in recovery, he looked at it and he said, "How much did that insurance guy tell you?" He said, I guess I'll get about $2,300 from him. He said, "I'll do it for that." And he went and got another buddy of his that had just come into sobriety that was his roofing buddy. And they did it. They put my whole new roof on. And it didn't even cost me the $900 out of pocket. A few days later, I called the teacher retirement guy, you know, and had him come out and talk to us about Norma's retirement situation. And he's looking at her check, and he says, "Norma, what's this deduction on your check over here?" And she said, "I don't know." He said, "They're deducting a little bit from your check and putting it in this other annuity thing you've got. And he said, I used to work for that company. They're not too good a company. He said, let me take that and close that account out and roll that money over into this one. And then we can do this and we can do that. And he did a little song and dance and a sleight of hand. And when he got through, I want you to know he figured out, got me enormous 5 years of retirement back. And it didn't cost me nothing. It was so cool. But just shortly later, I had a new roof on my house that cost me nothing. And I had enormous 5 years of retirement in the pocket. And it cost me nothing. I take that back. It cost me $35 to make an amends. Dr. Bob said, why, he argued, should I risk the remainder of my business by foolishly, foolishly, making these amends, that looks dumb. That's the way we feel sometimes. And because Dr. Bob balked, the big book says he went on a prodigious drunk to beat all drunks. But he came back and Bill sobered him back up. It says, one morning he took the bull by the horns. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he hurt. He trembled as he went about, because this could mean ruin, especially to people in his line of business. Yeah. It says at midnight he returned, exhausted, but very happy. Matching calamity with serenity. He has not had a drink since. And you read in Dr. Bob's nightmare, he says, my business is doing as well as can be expected in these troubled times. So the promise of this program did not only keep him sober, but it kept his business afloat. You say, well, of course his business did better because he quit drinking. Well, yeah, I'm sure that helped that he quit drinking. But you know, in the 12 and 12, it says this in chapter 2, step 2 of the 12 and 12, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. It said, you can, if you wish, make AA itself your higher power. Here's a very large group of people who have found a solution to their alcohol problem. In that respect, there is surely a power greater than you who haven't even begun to find a solution. Surely you can put your trust in them. You will find many members who cross the threshold just this way. All of them will tell you that once across, their faith broadened and deepened. Relieved of the alcohol obsession, their lives unaccountably transformed. They came to believe in a higher power. And most of them begin to call him God. Notice it says, relieved of the alcohol problem. See, you say Dr. Bob's business stayed afloat because he quit drinking. But it says here, relieved of the alcohol problem, their lives unaccountably transformed. You know, I can explain certain things by, I quit drinking. I had a little more money left over at the end of the month. I quit drinking. I had a few less dents in the car at the end of the month. I quit drinking. I didn't sleep on the couch quite as many nights this month. There's certain things that I can explain by I quit drinking. But the book says that it goes on from there. And our lives unaccountably transformed. There comes a point in the program, clink, and you're in tow. And you can't explain it from there on. It's not just that I quit drinking. Something bigger and beyond is going on here. They came to believe in a higher power. And most of them could no longer deny it must be God. Step 3 in the 12 and 12 says, practicing step 3 is like the opening a door which to all appearances is still closed and locked. What we need is a key. There's only one key and it is called willingness. And it says, once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock, the door seems to open almost of itself. That supernatural element in our program that you can't explain. I don't know. I just kind of put the key in the lock and it just sort of seemed like it opened by itself. The promise of the program that Abby said, you would enter upon a new relationship. Once these steps are taken, you'll enter upon a new relationship with your Creator and you will have the elements of a way of living which answers all your problems. This spiritual kit of tools that we've been given, let's don't just apply it to try to stay sober in troubled times. Let's apply it to the trouble itself. Because I believe the promise of our program will apply to that. Bill said, my friend promised me that. Then it said, He said, simple but not easy. Price had to be paid. Bill looked over the steps. A price had to be paid. But the moment I fully accepted, the effect was electric. See, he's thinking of the promise. And he's getting excited about that. Then he said, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to help other alcoholics find the solution to their problems. Plural. And I can promise you that this program can be applied to all your problems. Fred said it in chapter 3. He said, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. That's why Bill Wilson abandoned himself with enthusiasm. Yes, I can promise you that you can stay sober through all of life's troubles, but I can promise you also that if you want, you can have a God experience in the midst of those troubles that you can't explain. Bill got enthused about that prospect and about that promise. You know, sure, staying sober, that's good. But to have a God that will walk with you through all of that, that's icing on the cake. And if you're anything like me, the icing on the cake is the part you really liked anyway. Bill said, I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call a fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness, and a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Joy at our release from a life of frustration knew no bounds. We have struck something better than gold. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives. Hearts and lives. He works inside me, and He works out here in all my circumstances as well. My Creator has entered into my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. Miraculous. Are they throwing that word out just because it's a pretty word? It's poetic. A nice metaphor? Or do they really mean that we will experience the miraculous? Well, let's look at the sentence again. The central fact of our lives today, fact, underline that word, of our lives today is the absolute, underline that word, certainty, underline that word, that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. They used four adjectives in one sentence to stress that they mean this is indeed an absolute certain fact. You can experience the miraculous through the steps of this program. We have been given a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have been given a great sense of purpose. What is it? Our primary purpose. Say it with me. My primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. Clink. And that will be accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God that you won't be able to explain. God bless you.